In this world, according to Benjamin Franklin, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes. But lots of Americans, it seems, have been proving him wrong. They've been hiding their assets in overseas bank accounts to evade tax, which costs Washington an estimated $100 billion a year. Well, the US tax authorities were given a huge boost in August when the Swiss bank UBS agreed to reveal the names of almost 4,500 American clients with undisclosed offshore accounts. An amnesty has been offered until Thursday to anyone prepared to come clean in exchange for a lighter punishment. Barbara Kaplan is a New York lawyer acting for around 100 people who decided to apply for that amnesty. I asked her what her clients were like.
It's a very diverse group of clients. They are everything from Holocaust survivors and the children of Holocaust survivors, a very large number of foreign-born naturalized citizens or U.S. residents, as well as native-born Americans who have foreign accounts.
Are they extremely wealthy?
Not necessarily. It's very interesting. Quite a few of them are of really fairly modest means.
So why have they been sheltering their assets in foreign bank accounts?
It's actually for a whole host of reasons, but I would say the vast majority of the clients I've seen actually have accounts that were opened before they were citizens of the United States or emigrated to the United States.
So are you saying that these people weren't aware that they were doing anything wrong?
Not necessarily. I think most of them knew that they had to report the income from these accounts and didn't do that because of their concern about secrecy. I don't think they were motivated that much by saving taxes on the interest and dividends that were earned in these accounts, but more about maintaining the secrecy of the existence of the fund.
So why have they stepped forward now as part of this amnesty? Why not just try to keep going as they always have done?
Predominantly, I think, because of the impact of the UBS case and the fact that the secrecy that was offered in Switzerland has now been called into question.
So what do you think is going to happen to your clients now? I mean, obviously, as part of this amnesty, the quid pro quo to them stepping forward is that they will get a lighter punishment. I understand they won't go to jail. I mean, are they worried about the penalties? I don't know, in terms of fines?
The benefits that they get from coming into the program are that they won't be prosecuted for any tax crimes, and they will know what the penalties are going to be. They're going to have to pay the tax and interest that they owe with respect to income earned in 6 years. They're going to pay a 20% tax penalty on top of that, and then they're going to pay a 20% foreign bank account report penalty, which is going to be 20% of the highest balance on deposit in their accounts in the last 6 years.
That was the New York lawyer Barbara Kaplan. Well, UBS was forced to hand over clients' account details after a member of its own staff, Bradley Birkenfeld, decided to tell the authorities what was going on. He's since been jailed for 3 years, which his lawyer Dean Zerb believes will deter any other whistleblower from speaking out, and so making it much harder for the government to track down tax evaders in future.
The problem is you don't have Boy Scouts in these rooms that are deciding how to engage in tax mischief. You've got folks that have got not clean hands. And so the problem is anyone that wants to come forward, they're immediately going to think, well, geez, they could get me too. And on one hand, I've got people coming forward, seeing what's possible, seeing that you could get a very significant award and interested in coming clean and being honest about what's happening. But I've got just as many people who are really nervous, incredibly nervous about seeing what happened to Birkenfeld and saying, well, why wouldn't that happen to me? So I think the government has really shot itself in the foot in terms of its efforts to try to deal with the offshore banking and accounts.
Dean Zerb. Well, now to the day on Wall Street, where investors had mixed feelings about the latest crop of profit figures from the banks. Here's Bob Brusker at Fact and Opinion Economics in New York.
Well, the story with banks has been sort of mixed. We had J.P. Morgan report great results. We had Goldman report some great results. Even Citibank's results beat expectations, but a number of the banks are still having difficulties despite the expectations. So the story so far for earnings in general is about 75% of the reporters are exceeding expectations, but foreclosures are down for the second month in a row. They're still at very high levels, not declining very rapidly. And of course, that affects what banks have on their balance sheets to a large extent. It's mortgages in various forms.
Some people are saying that the difference in results between Goldman Sachs and Citigroup in a way reflect the difference between Wall Street and Main Street at the moment. time at Goldman Sachs, obviously relying on investment banking, making a lot of its money from bond and currency trading. Citigroup, though, relying more on retail banking and more exposed to things like people defaulting on their credit card loans and on their home loans.
Well, I think that's true to some extent, but Citibank has a lot more of the kind of stuff on its balance sheet that's been sitting there that has been troubled all along. Goldman isn't really the kind of firm that hangs on to a lot of stuff on its balance sheet the way a traditional commercial bank does. Goldman doesn't have a deposit base the way a commercial bank would.
Bob Brusker. Well, the Dow ended up 0.5% higher at 10,062. London's 100 share index, that was lower. It closed down 0.6% at 52.22. December New York light crude oil was up $2.62 at $78.22 a barrel. Now, Zimbabwe ought to have a thriving tourist industry. In the spectacular Victoria Falls, it's got one of the world's most bankable attractions. But a decade of economic decline and political controversy has meant visitors have shunned and not embraced Zimbabwe. Most people visiting the Victoria Falls see them from across the border in Zambia. Now, although the jury is still out on the success of Zimbabwe's power-sharing government, the authorities are trying to redouble efforts to tempt tourists back. Over the past 2 days, the capital, Harare, has played host to a big tourism fair. The BBC's Steve Vickers was there. He told me more.
10 years ago, there was huge potential for growth in the Zimbabwe tourism industry. It collapsed almost overnight in 2000 with the invasions of the white-owned farms that, of course, was covered all over the world's media, and too with President Mugabe's demonisation of the West.
Steve, how much has Zimbabwe really lost out because of the problems, obviously, with the tourist industry in the last decade or so?
Tourism in the southern African region has grown a lot while Zimbabwe has declined. Neighbouring Botswana has become very popular. Zambia and South Africa have both gained tourists that might have come to Zimbabwe to see the Victoria Falls. The perceptions held in the West is what is keeping tourists away. So for as long as President Mugabe remains in power, significant numbers of tourists won't come here to Zimbabwe. But when I put that to Karikoga Kaseke, the chief executive of the Zimbabwe Tourism Authority, he had a totally different perspective.
As far as we're concerned, President Mugabe is a tourism product. People who come here, they all demand to see the president. They want to see him, and they are very disappointed that they are not able to see him. And for anyone to say that tourists are not coming to Zimbabwe because President Mugabe is in power is naive, to say the very least.
That was Karikoga Kaseke. So, Steve, are these attempts to get more people to go to Zimbabwe from the West, especially Britain, how likely are those attempts to succeed?
Well, there are 27 tour operator companies from the UK over here at the moment. They're sampling the tourist destinations. Many are in the Manor Pools in the north of the country. This is a spectacular place where you camp in the open in a vast game camp on the edge of the Zambezi River. Quite literally, you have hyenas sniffing around your tent in the middle of the night. But the question still remains whether they can sell this to the British public. It's going to hinge on the perceptions in Britain, whether people feel there's been enough political change here to consider visiting.
Steve Vickers in Harare. Well, don't forget the latest edition of World Business News is always to be found on our website, along with a podcast published when Wall Street closes. And you can find them by typing bbcworldservice.com/business.
There's a BBC podcast for every area of business.
I'm Roger Hearing with the latest business news from the BBC.
From today's world business news to global trends with Peter Day.
So I've made a trip to the new China to see what impact credit crunch is having here.
And from the top of the morning.
Welcome to Wake Up to Money with Mickey Clark.
Hello, I'm Leslie Kerwin. Welcome to Business Daily.
To the bottom line.
Who makes money when boom turns to bust?
Download your choice of BBC business podcasts at bbc.co.uk/podcasts.